Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court. Be seated, please. Case number 08-5120, Abington Crest Nursing and Rehabilitation Center et al. Appellants versus Charles E. Johnson, Acting Secretary, United States Department of Health and Human Services. Mr. Miller for the appellants, Mr. Fonzoni for the appellee.
May it please the court, my name is Daniel Miller, and together with my colleague, Ms. Barbara Janicek, and our co-counsel, Mr. John Jacob, who appears with me this morning in court, we represent the appellants in this action. Your Honors, when the Congress enacted the Balanced Budget Act of 1997, it made a series of changes to Medicare and Medicaid program rules and statutes, I should say, that give rise to the dispute that brings us here this morning. Among the changes that were made in the BBA of 97 included the following. State Medicaid programs were in that legislation permitted to pay something less than the Medicare allowed deductibles and coinsurance. In other words, they were no longer required to pay the full amount of the deductibles and coinsurance permitted by the Medicare program for the dual eligible residents, those individuals who are eligible for both medical assistance and Medicare benefits. Secondly, the BBA changed the payment system for skilled nursing facilities, our clients in this action. The BBA adopted a prospective payment system for Part A benefits, and it adopted the physician fee schedule for certain services that are paid through Part B of the Medicare program. And the third change of note with regard to the BBA was that a limitation was imposed on hospital bad debt claims, but no such limitation was imposed upon skilled nursing facility bad debt claims in that legislation. Taken together, these changes created a situation where skilled nursing facilities that treat dual eligible residents received 80% of certain Part B services in accordance with the fee schedule that was established as the payment system for some services. But for the other 20%, for those dual eligible residents, according to the BBA, they could no longer be paid through the state Medicaid programs if the state programs limited payment to some degree, either in whole or in part, as less than what Medicare would pay for the same service. We also could no longer go and collect payment from the dual eligible residents themselves because the medical assistance programs prohibit going to the dual eligible residents if the program itself is not responsible for the payment. So with those changes, skilled nursing facilities were caught in a quandary because they can't receive that extra 20% of their revenue, uncollected revenue. Historically, they were allowed to collect that from the Medicare program as bad debt claims. However,
Council, if I can ask, you know, obviously one of the key issues we have to decide is what standard of review we use here. There's a great deal of deference that we're supposed to give to the Secretary's reasonable interpretations. My first question for you is, do you see the Secretary's mistake here as a Chevron mistake? Is there something that the Secretary has done that's unreasonable with respect to the statute, or is it a Seminole Rock mistake in that the regulations, his interpretation of the regulations is somehow unreasonable? Which is your strongest argument?
I think that the interpretation of the regulation is unreasonable and that the plain language of the regulation does support the claim for bad debts. However, I also think that the interpretation of the regulation that the Secretary has made, disallowing those claims, does run afoul of the statute, particularly 42 U.S.C. 1395 XV1A. Because therein, certain categories of providers, including skilled nursing facilities, are defined as providers of services. And for those certain institutional providers, hospitals are another category, home health agencies are another, for those types of providers, the payment system, whatever payment system the Secretary may choose, is not permitted to result in cost shifting between program beneficiaries and non-program beneficiaries.
Can I just ask about that? So if you have a fee schedule, which we now have, doesn't that necessarily mean that there will be cost shifting somehow? That is, some of the providers will be given a fee that is more than their actual costs, and some will be given a fee, a reimbursement based on a fee that is less than their costs. So it necessarily means that there's going to have to be cost shifting. Isn't that right?
Indeed, Your Honor. And it's important to understand that the source of this fee schedule, the fee schedule that we're talking about was developed in 1991 through regulatory action following on legislation in the late 1980s. It was developed for physician services. And when the Congress enacted the physician fee schedule, they took account of certain discrete costs, but they also were working on a specific category of providers, physicians in particular. And for the physician practices, they had never paid bad debts for physician services. That's a matter of record in this action.
Before we get to, I do want to ask you about that, but before we get to that, it's inherent in a fee schedule, isn't it, that there that some costs will be overpaid and some will be underpaid?
That's true.
So doesn't that seem like by imposing a cost, a fee system on this process, that Congress is not expecting that the cross-subsidization rule will apply?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because the fee schedule was initially adopted for a group of providers, physicians, who are not subject to the cross-subsidization principle set forth in the statute. If you look at the definitional section, provider of services includes three or four categories, including SNFs. It does not include physicians. So for those individuals, the fee schedule that was used, cross-subsidization was never a point of controversy because that was not applied to that group of providers. When they borrowed from the fee schedule in 1998 and said from this point forward...
When you say they, you mean Congress?
Yes, sir. When they borrowed from the fee schedule and said from this point forward, certain services, discrete services, and so you're clear, we're talking about inpatient services to residents who have exhausted their Part A benefits but still require some therapy. So they said, all right, we're going to look to the fee schedule for the amount of payment. But in doing that, they did not relieve the secretary of his obligation to avoid cost shifting for the category of providers now affected by the fee schedule. If you look at the statute, skilled nursing facilities still have that cross-subsidization prohibition built into the statute. And if you review 1395
XV1A, say again which section specifically says that skilled nursing facilities do.
It's cited in our brief, Your Honor. There's a definitional section, and the definition is for the term providers of services. And I will give you the precise definitional section on rebuttal.
What is it about the providers of services section that tells you that? I think the government's position is that this section only applies where it's based on reasonable costs.
That's correct. But if you look at the language of the statute itself, it's very clear that Congress allows the secretary a great deal of latitude in terms of the payment systems that might be employed. In fact, if you look at it closely, you'll see that for this category of providers, providers of services including SNFs, even a charge-based system is subject to the anti-cross-subsidization principle built into the statute.
Tell me which, I have the section that says provider of services and the definition, and V is the reasonable cost section, which includes the cross-subsidization section.
Yes, sir.
So what counters the government's argument that that section only applies to the definition of reasonable cost? It begins, the reasonable cost of any services shall be.
Yes, it does say that, and it also goes into great detail as to the variety of payment systems that the government is permitted to employ, including things such as a charge-based system, which, interestingly enough, is what was the original source of payments to physicians. But if you review that section in its entirety, no matter what system the secretary chooses to employ to pay providers of services, SNFs, you still have the cross-subsidization principle that comes into play. The difficulty for us is this. By statutory change, the 20% of the revenue related to this particular group of providers, dual eligibles, is not recoverable from any source. Medicaid doesn't have to pay it. The beneficiary doesn't have to pay it, both by statute. And now Medicare says they no longer are responsible.
We understand the dilemma you're in. We're trying to figure out where your basis is. Where is it? where is it in the history of this program that Medicare has paid for bad debts for services paid under a fee schedule?
Well, if you...
I mean, that's part of what the government is saying. It's not there. It's never been there.
Well, I would respectfully
disagree. I mean, I'm asking you, cite us two examples of where that occurs, because they say it doesn't occur.
And if you review our brief, Your Honor, you'll see that with regard to the ambulatory surgery centers, they have payments made on a fee schedule, and bad debt claims are permitted for those services.
But apart from that one example, the Secretary is correct that that is not the routine, right? And Congress put this in B. The challenge category here is in Part B, right?
Yes, it's
and that's
Part
a fee
B
schedule.
There's a Part B schedule, yes.
That's where we are, and that's a fee schedule. And typically, Medicare does not pay for bad debts in a fee schedule program, right?
Indeed. In fact, there have been some changes to the statute and to the regulation where that has been adopted. So for anesthetist services, as an example, when that was moved to a fee schedule, I think that was in 1991 as well, Congress said there shall be no more bad debt. The regulation 413.80 was amended to reflect that fact. And so from that point forward, those fee schedule services were not subject to bad debt claims, both by Congress and by the Secretary. And I cannot point you to another situation where a fee schedule payment has been subject to bad debt claims, but at least with regard to the ambulatory surgery centers.
The government says with respect to the ambulatory surgery centers that this is based on costs, not on fees, historical costs, median costs, but not on fees. Is that not true?
I think that it is based upon costs. Our point of contention with regard to that is all of these systems, all of them, are derived from costs.
But there really are clear categories that we're looking at because we're trying to sort it out. We understand, I think we all understand, that you're saying you're being squeezed here. We understand that. The problem is that may require legislative or regulatory action. So that's not helping you, as you answer Judge Garland.
Well, why do you say that this is a cost? So at least in my head, guys are, you know, more about this, and so you'll be able to explain this. In my head, there seem to be two kinds of prospective payment systems, one based on historical costs, usually median costs, right, and one based on historical fees, that is, the fees that have been charged, in this case, by physicians, right? At least on its face, this is about fees, correct?
Yes, sir.
Statute says fees, right?
Yes.
Okay, so, and the government's position, I understand it to be at least, and I'll ask them whether this is empirical or theoretical, that when, at least with respect to the theory, that when a physician charges a fee, the physician naturally tries to get a profit, and that profit has to take into consideration their expenses, including their bad debts. So that as a theoretical matter, if you base your system on fees, you build in some bad debt consideration. What's wrong with that argument?
Well, one thing that's wrong with it is that if you look at how the fee schedule was constructed, there were specific costs that were taken into account as the schedule was developed back in 1991. Things like rent, overhead, utilities, malpractice insurance, those are specific items of costs that were built into the schedule.
In addition to fees, or is fees not? I mean, when
yes, that was in addition to fees, Your Honor.
So,
and the fee, the language for fees was relative value units, and that's how they tried to measure physicians' work in terms of how the fees thing was approached.
Right. So why?
If I could, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, what I was going to add is when that schedule was developed in 1991, institutional providers like skilled nursing facilities were specifically exempted from it, so there was no consideration of costs or fees or much less bad debt for them in the development of the fee schedule.
Congress put you in it.
Congress borrowed the schedule
right.
to say this is the amount that will be paid for certain services.
Right. And Congress did not think carefully about whether or not it was truly adaptable, but that's where you were put statutorily.
Well, Congress did that. That's true enough. And in doing that, they also limited bad debt claims for certain providers, hospitals, but not for SNFs. When they did that, the regulation wasn't changed either, 413.80. So we believe that the plain language of the regulation does not determine, it doesn't limit the claims to that's cost-based only. It doesn't say it has to be anything other than billed on a fee schedule.
Well, again, the government, as I understand it, we'll hear if that's correct, they said that is just a given. That is understood if you're under a fixed key, whether or not that fixed schedule makes any sense. If you're under a fixed schedule and you are here by matter of statute, you don't get bad debt collection. That's just the way it operates. That's always been the case. Let me ask you another question.
Yes, sir.
I was surprised by your answer on Chevron and regulation. I thought in your brief there were several places where you say if the government had done this right, notice and comment and the normal regulatory procedures, they could have come up with an answer of the sort that they are given, but they didn't. I didn't really understand a Chevron claim being raised here. That is that this position cannot stand as a matter of law under any careful reading of the statute.
Perhaps I wasn't clear, and I see that my time is nearly up, but I did wish to answer affirmatively both with regard to the interpretation being violative of the statute, but we also believe that there is a problem with their interpretation of the regulation as being not supported by evidence.
No, I understood your interpretation of the regulation, but I thought in your brief, I thought there were places where you were essentially conceding that they could have reached this had they done it correctly under the APA.
Well, in fact, Your Honor, they did do that.
No,
the problem is they didn't do it until 2007.
I understand that, but that's not my question. I'm wondering, are you really focusing on a Chevron claim and saying this interpretation of the statute cannot stand as a matter of law?
Yes, sir. That is our position.
Where is that in your brief? You can tell me in rebuttal, because I missed
that. I'm
sorry.
Perhaps I misunderstood your question. We do maintain that there is a problem with they are not properly interpreting the plain language of the regulation.
I understand that. That's a separate claim.
Yes, sir.
I clearly understand that.
Right.
But you answered Judge Griffith by saying, no, we also meant to say there's a Chevron claim, which to me means you're saying this interpretation, no matter when or where, cannot stand as an interpretation of the statute.
Well, Your
it
Honor,
fails under Chevron.
In bringing our case forward, we thought it better to focus on the precise issue before the court. Now, as a matter, because in 1999 there was no regulation that would support what they have done. If you're asking me whether, if we would challenge the same claim.
I'm asking you what you think is before us. So you said to Judge Griffin, Griffith, you think there's a Chevron claim. I missed it. I don't know what the Chevron claim is. Indeed, I thought you said the interpretation might be reasonable had it been properly promulgated, but they're misreading their regulation, and then they tried to undo the problem later by revising the regulation. I got all of that. But I did not see a real Chevron issue.
Well,
that you had raised.
Okay. Your Honor, I see that I'm.
No, that's
time.
All right.
Okay.
As long as we're talking.
All right, as long as we're talking. Our position is they have misread and misapplied the regulation. They have adopted.
That's your principal position.
Yes.
They can't get. Now, let me come to that. You're saying you were not given proper notice of the regulation that was in place that would have caused you to think that this would be the result? In other words, they're straining to find this answer in the regulation.
They can't find the answer in the regulation because it's not there. They are adopting an additional requirement that is not present in the regulation.
Well, agencies,
that is our principal
agencies
position.
Agencies in interpreting their regulation, where we give them deference, are always interpreting something that is ambiguous, and we defer to their reasonable construction of an ambiguous regulation. We only blanch when what they've done is to, in fact, effectively amend the regulation and make it something other than what it was. Is that what you're claiming?
They're
just not here.
They don't have. We would maintain that if they apply the regulation as it is written, we would be entitled to recover these bad debts because the plain language of the regulation focuses on our loss of revenue related to treating Medicare beneficiaries. That's the requirement of the regulation as written and as in place in 1999. There is no talk about, well, it has to be this schedule or that schedule, or it has to be fee-based, not cost-based. That is not present. This is something that they are adding to the picture through interpretation, and we don't believe that can stand under the plain language of the regulation.
Under G, payment for services furnished in SNFs.
Indeed, and if you look at the regulation in its entirety, you'll see that there is The concept from the statute with regard to the anti-cross subsidization principle is embedded in the regulation as it was written.
But that double I section talks about under G2 double I, we're talking about persons who are covered by Part B schedule.
Yes, sir.
All right, so anticipating what the government will say is, if the regulation is talking about a Part B schedule, and we know Congress forced you into a fixed schedule, and they're correct that if it's a fixed schedule, you never collect bad debts, then it is a reasonable interpretation of this regulation to say, we want to clarify that, make sure you understand, bad debt is not collectible, never has been, and it's not collectible here either. So once, that's a fair reading of the regulation.
Once they've completed notice and comment rulemaking, yes.
I hear what you're saying. Okay.
Let me just be sure I understand, though. I had, although you don't use a citation to Chevron, I had understood your position to be the same as you originally presented to Judge Griffith. That is, you do have a problem with their interpretation of the regulation. But your brief, and particularly the reply brief, is replete with the suggestion that what they're doing is inconsistent with the statute. That is, with at least with several statutory sections, but primarily with the cross-subsidization section, right?
Yes.
And therefore that they are misinterpreting or misapplying or wrongly applying the statute by not allowing for bad debts because that violates the statutory requirement of no cross-subsidization.
With regard to this category of providers, yes.
All right. Now, let me ask just one other.
Let me just follow up. Sure. Anywhere in the principal brief? Because if it's in the reply and that's where you first raised that argument, we're not as interested under the law of the circuit. I didn't see it in your principal brief. A Chevron heading as an alternative to, and you misconstrued your regulation, is a very easy argument to make. I missed it. Are you saying it's in your principal brief?
I believe that the issue was raised in our principal brief.
You think it's kind of tucked in there somewhere?
Yes, sir.
I must say, it's clear to me the government understood it since they cite Chevron back, but your first argument heading says, the Secretary's refusal to reimburse the facility's uncollectible deductibles contravenes Medicare's prohibition against cross-subsidization and the plain language of the regulation.
Yes. The regulation.
And the plain language of the regulation, so which I understood to mean, and then Part A is Medicare's, of your argument, is Medicare's prohibition against cross-subsidization. That's a statutory argument, right?
It is.
And then the second part is about the regulation. All right, let me just ask you about one other statutory argument you're making.
Yes, sir.
That is about 1395X something E, the section that says at the end of it, notwithstanding the previous sentence.
Oh, yes, sir.
All right. So you say that this says such notwithstanding the previous sentence, such regulation with respect to skilled nursing facilities shall take into account the cost of such facilities. Right?
Yes.
But the rest of the sentence says, the cost of such facilities complying with the requirements of subsection B, C, and D. It doesn't sound like it's a general direction that they have, costs have to be taken into consideration. It sounds like a direction that the costs of compliance have to be taken into consideration. Am I wrong about that?
Well, Your Honor, we read it a little more broadly than that, and our point in making that point was that in their brief, the Secretary said, well, this is no longer cost-based. And we believe that all of these systems are cost-based, and Congress has directed the Secretary in adopting various methods of payment to Medicare providers to consider the provider's costs of services to render. So that's why we raised that section as an additional reference to consideration of cost as an element of what goes into the rulemaking.
But the costs they're talking about here are not costs like bad debt, right?
No, I think it's more of a general cost of operations. It does not reference bad debt.
Well, it's cost of compliance. Well, I'm not sure what compliance is.
I believe it's compliance with certain additions to the Medicare program that were made with regard to ensuring that all residents were receiving the highest level of recovery through the treatment that they receive in skilled nursing facilities.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
From the government.
Your honors. May it please the court. Chris Fonzone for the Department of Justice, representing the appellee. The appellants in this case recognized that the bad debt regulation was based on the Medicare Act's anti-cross-subsidization principle, and that this anti-cross-subsidization principle is found in the Act's definition of reasonable costs. Reasonable costs is a specific manner of repayment, and the Secretary has consequently consistently refused to extend this anti-cross-subsidization principle or the bad debt regulation to reimbursements made under fee schedule methodology. Indeed, the appellants do not point to a single instance in which bad debts are repaid under a fee schedule or the anti-cross-subsidization principle.
Well, they just point to one.
The ambulatory surgical centers? The actual statutory language that lays out how ambulatory surgical centers are to be repaid is in 1395LI2A, and the language reads that the center should be paid a fair fee, and that fair fee is defined as the costs incurred for providing the services. That formulation, the costs incurred, is almost identical to the definition of reasonable costs, which is the costs actually incurred. And the Secretary has interpreted the 1395L to be essentially a cost-based repayment mechanism rather than a fee.
It's not really a fee system in that sense?
No, it's not a fee system.
Not like the others you're talking about.
Let me pause for a second. I thought that your argument in your brief, I may have misunderstood it, was that the prospective payment system based on costs rather than fees, but it's not a reasonable cost system. Is that wrong? Am I wrong?
No, you're correct. The prospective payment system is not a reasonable cost system, but it is a cost-based system.
But it is a prospective payment system. It's not one where you ask what are your costs and we decide whether your actual costs are reasonable.
No, it's a determination of average costs that are then paid prospectively to try to encourage providers to save in costs.
Now, in our kidney center case, we suggested, it seems to me, that even under that kind of system, the cross-subsidization rule has no place because somebody's always going to get over-reimbursed and somebody's always going to get under-reimbursed. That's what the definition of median is, right?
Right.
So does it make sense to distinguish at all the prospective payment system based on costs from a prospective payment system based on fees?
I think the distinction the Secretary has made is between the notion that a cost-based reimbursement system, you would only receive your costs, where a fee-based reimbursement system, you'll be receiving one set price to include everything. It's to make the provider whole. And in that fee would be the costs plus some profit margin in which the bad debts would be taken into account.
Is that theoretical or empirical? That is, they argue that historically that's not actually what happened here. And there's nothing in your brief with evidence saying, or in any of the proceedings in the agency, with evidence saying that, in fact, bad debts were included in the physician's fees. So is your position theoretical about that, that fees always include profit and therefore always include expenses, or is there some experience here?
I mean, I think it's a theoretical position based on the logic of a provider would not charge an amount of money that would not allow them to reimburse to make themselves whole. I mean, if costs plus your profit plus bad debts was more than your charge, the providers would go out of business. So to the extent that the repayment is based on charges, that would logically have to contain a bad debt reimbursement in it. So it's a theoretical rather than a...
What's your answer to their argument that this is all about physicians as a consequence of the statute, but nonetheless it's about physicians and it's not about SNFs and therefore it's not a reasonable way of accounting for bad debts at all because the systems aren't the same at all?
I think our answer is that would be a legislative fix we need in that case. Congress actually placed them in the physician's fee schedule knowing that bad debts would not be repaid under that fee schedule.
Knowing because you'd never repaid in the past.
We'd never repay in the past.
What about their argument that, or their statement just now, an oral argument, that the physical fees, physician's fees, schedule did take into account certain costs? I think what opposing counsel said was that schedule is based on a fee plus certain additional kinds of costs.
My understanding of how the fee schedule was created was that the charges physicians charge were disaggregated into their component parts, some of which may have been rent and costs, and then aggregated up and then the fee schedule was indexed to the reasonable charge payments that were made before the fee schedule was put into effect. So obviously, in the charge any physician charges, there'll be cost components to that charge, and the secretary was trying to take into account those costs.
So the indexing is the reason for it was disaggregated. But you don't have any reason to believe they excluded bad debt costs.
Well, I don't think bad debts were specifically included, but I think that the notion was that in whatever profit margin was baked into the reasonable charge, that bad debts would be included in there.
Is, in your view, is there anything that would prohibit you from passing a regulation that said, in light of the fact that the scheme that Congress pointed to doesn't fully account for bad debts of the sort faced by SNFs, we are going to have a different, slightly different arrangement? We'll use the fixed schedule or adjust the fixed schedule. What is that within the authority of the secretary?
I don't want to speak definitively, but my thought would be yes. I would note that Congress has, the secretary has promulgated regulations saying that bad debts will not be repaid under a fee schedule subsequently to the actions in this case. So they would have to amend that and say, except in this instance.
Yeah, well, what I'm asking is, I understood that they simply confirmed what they had done here. During that notice and comment rulemaking, could they have received comments on, look, you have to adjust it in certain circumstances because we're not about the doctor's fee schedule? Could the secretary have acted on that in the regulation?
I don't think the statute or the regulation would foreclose them for doing that, no.
So the statute wouldn't, I assume you'd have to come up with a rationale that would overcome the rationale you've now used, which is historical precedent. So there have to be some explanation for an exception.
And an explanation could be that the fee schedule was originally created for physicians and these institutional providers have different.
And it couldn't run contrary to the anti-cross-subsidization statutory principle, right?
It couldn't run counter to that, but there's all sorts of other principles in the Medicare Act, or just the fact that the fee schedule was created for physicians and the realities for institutional providers may be different and they could promulgate regulations.
Whatever fix would have to be careful not to have some subsidization.
Well, to the extent that it's a fee schedule, we would argue that the anti-cross-subsidization principle doesn't apply to the fee schedule because it's contained in the definition of reasonable costs. And the Secretary has extended that to the PPS system, which is another cost-based system.
I thought you were talking about a situation here where the fee schedule that's being used may not, in fact, vindicate those interests.
Right. That's what I'm curious about.
If the fee schedule does not vindicate the anti-cross-subsidization interests, is that the question that's being asked? I think the Secretary's position, I'd have two answers. The first would be the Secretary has consistently said that the anti-cross-subsidization principle does not apply to the fee schedule.
So you wouldn't have to act consistent with that.
We wouldn't have to act consistent with that, but there are other reasons why it may make sense.
That's to a fee schedule that has as one of its features taking into account the various costs, right? But if you have a fee schedule that doesn't do that.
I think we would still make a distinction between cost-based reimbursement systems, like a reasonable cost methodology, and a fee schedule methodology. And the anti-cross-subsidization principle is contained at 1395X V1, which is a cost-based, which is a statutory.
So take me through, one of the arguments they're making is, as you well understand, we give deference to the agency's interpretation of its own regulation, so long as, you know, it's fairly there to be read, and you're curing an ambiguity, but there's a basis for it. We don't give deference if all you've done is to simply tack on a new provision to a regulation that's self-serving. They're saying you did the latter, that all you did was just amend the regulation to make it work for the decision you had already made. What are you pointing to show me there's a reasonable but ambiguous construction there that the agency just cured?
Well, the regulation itself, 413.80 at the time of the 0.80 at the time of the dispute, was actually contained in Part 413, which is Principles of Reasonable Cost Reimbursement. So the Secretary had always said that bad debts were a function of a cost-based methodology, and that the regulation only applies in those instances and doesn't apply in the instance of a fee schedule.
And which section are you pointing to as the original?
It's 413.80 is the original regulation, and that's contained in Part 413 of the Secretary's regulations.
Can I just just ask you about that statutory section that popped up, I think, in the reply brief, but was mentioned also in the opening brief, I think, 1395X, and then subsection E.
V1E, I mean.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what's your answer to their argument that one says that costs are to be taken into consideration?
Well, I think that 1395X V1E is actually part, E is a subpart of the definition of reasonable costs. So the Secretary would say that focus on costs would only be relevant when the Secretary is reimbursing providers on a cost basis.
So it begins, though, talking specifically about payment of the cost of skilled nursing facility services. Is the idea that this has been overtaken by events, by the Balanced Budget Act, or is it there are some elements of the cost of skilled nursing facility services that are still reimbursed, or what?
I think it'd be one of two arguments. One would either be it's been overtaken by the Balanced Budget Act, or two, it would apply only to those skilled nursing facilities that are reimbursed on a cost basis.
And there are some.
The PPS, which is there's still a cost-based reimbursement rather than a fee-based reimbursement.
The point that I was focusing on, which is that the rest of that sentence says, of such facilities complying with the requirements of B, C, and D, is that relevant at all, or does that not solve the problem? Does that not solve your problem?
I mean, I think that's another manner in which to solve the problem. The Secretary's position is just that it would not apply to a fee schedule because it's contained in the definition of reasonable costs.
No other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I have a chance for reply. Is there any time remaining? I will give you 2 minutes, okay?
Very briefly, there was a question in my initial argument with regard to the statutory definition for providers of services. That's 1395XU. Which is the definition that incorporates hospitals, skilled nursing facilities, and a couple of other categories. A couple of points with regard to the government's position. One is, despite their protests, we don't think there's anything in the record that would allow you to find that there's been a long established record of this as an interpretation of the bad debt regulation prior to this situation developing following the adoption of the BBA. Number two, with regard to whether the whole concept of reasonable costs continues to apply following the adoption of PPS for Part A and SNFs and the Part B fee schedule with regard to certain services following the BBA's adoption, I would ask the court to note that when Congress established the Deficit Reduction Act of 2005 and specifically limited bad debt claims for skilled nursing facilities, that provision is part of 1395XV. And specifically, you'll find it in subpart V of that same statutory provision. So in other words, Congress thinks that 1395XV still applies with regard to the determination of cost and reimbursement to skilled nursing facilities.
I ask you two questions about that. One is that in the brief somewhere, that what the citation you're talking about?
Yes.
And is that sort of subsequent legislative action you're talking about?
It is. That was the Deficit Reduction Act of 2005.
So the argument is later Congress is giving us some idea what the earlier Congress thought?
Well, I think it again goes right to the Secretary's position that somehow the reasonable cost concept no longer has any bearing upon what skilled nursing facilities are supposed to receive. When Congress limited their bad debt claims, they did so in 1395XV, and that is in our brief. And so finally, we would just point out that in their presentation, the government acknowledged that there is nothing in the record to support the notion that bad debt expenses have been built into the fee schedule in a way that would provide SNFs a fair reimbursement for providing services to dual eligibles. On behalf of our clients, thank you for your consideration.
Does your argument, if we were writing an opinion and you're supporting your side of this claim, other parties would be able to come in under fixed schedules and say, we're not bound by that fixed schedule. We can make claims for reasonable costs because it doesn't account for all of our costs.
If they're providers of services protected by the cross-subsidization principle, that would be our position.
So that would be almost anything then, almost right. Any cost.
Well, again, you have to understand the government concedes that a lot of the PPS systems are subject to bad debt reimbursement.
Leaving aside bad debt, what about some other costs that they come in and say? I mean, it's not, if it's li- if it's a situation like yours where the provider is not physician and would come in and say, well, yes, Congress said apply the physician's fees, but they're not really analogous to the services we provide, so you have to account for our costs. Anybody could make that argument.
Well, again, I think there would be limitations because a lot of the services paid under the physician fee schedule are for categories of providers that are defined as medical and other health services, and so they have traditionally been paid under the fee schedule, and they are not by definition subject to the cross-subsidization prohibition as are hospitals, skilled nursing facilities, critical access hospitals, and the like.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take the case under submission.